Inside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught offside from a basement inside of my luxurious home and from an apartment in Brooklyn. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
I'm good, man. How are you? I heard you had a bit of a day today.
Yeah, I sure did. We'll talk about that in a sec. We should tell people first, lots of EPL action yesterday, today. We'll talk about all that. Tottenham players fighting right there in front of us on the field. Christian Pulisic continuing to do so many great things for Chelsea. It's making an American soccer fan who usually hates Chelsea feel very conflicted inside watching their games. MLS is about to be back, as they tell you in the name of their tournament. MLS is back. We're going to talk with Stefano Fusaro, who is down there for ESPN. He's inside the bubble. So we're going to talk with him about everything going on down there, what it's been like, what the reaction to FC Dallas and their departure was like, what it's been like for Nashville, who are now kind of going through a similar situation to Dallas, although they're still in the tournament. There's a lot to talk about. We'll do our own soccer, like actual soccer conversation about MLS is back. And Red Card's Man of the Match is back as well. So there's really a lot to get to on this podcast. I'm very excited about it. Stefano will join us in a few minutes. But yeah, I had a weird day today. So like you know, like we had talked about, we actually didn't mention it on the last podcast, but I had my sister's wedding, and it was great. You know, it was kind of like, obviously it was different. Not the wedding that they were planning to have. They were planning on having a conventional wedding with a lot of people and friends and at a reception hall and all that stuff. And coronavirus has obviously made it so that's not the case. And so I wound up officiating it, and I was really happy with how everything went. Really, it was a great time. But my wife and I, in the aftermath of it, you know, it was the first time that we had kind of like opened ourselves up. We have been on strict lockdown. We have been militant with how we've handled ourselves during all this. And so this is our first time where we were like opened up to like 20 people and whoever they've been, you know, palling around with or whatever. Like, so who knows how big our circle just got in this one event. And so afterwards, I don't know if we were like in our head or what. We didn't have fevers, but a little bit of sore throat, real, really tired. Again, probably nothing, probably allergies, but we were just like, you know what? There's a testing site right near us. It's free to go. It's super convenient. You have to drive through. We were like, you know what? Let's just make an appointment and we'll just go. So we did it today. Oh, wow. I would say a couple things about it for anyone that has not gotten it done. Like I said, it is easy. Like these sites, at least here in New York, because things have calmed down in terms of people who have coronavirus or think they have it. I don't want to speak for other parts of the country that are going through it in a bad way right now, but we just drove right in and did it. One thing about it, it was actually more uncomfortable than what I was expecting. That thing is up there, man. Like, and they keep it up there for 6 seconds in each nostril. It was truly uncomfortable.
It's even worse when you showed up without any pants. Sir, this is up your nose. Oh. Oh, right.
Right. Oh, misinformation. But I will say this, though. It felt like I did everything wrong when I got there.
How'd you
so,
mean?
Like, well, I pulled up and immediately I rolled the window down. And there was a minor freak out from the woman who came to my car. No, no, windows up, windows up. I said, oh, my God. Like, oh, I'm sorry. I don't want to do anything wrong here. It all feels very official and serious.
Yeah, they entered the car via the tailpipe.
So windows up, windows up. Now I was afterwards, I was like, was there a sign? Like, did I even see that? But whatever. So then that was the first checkpoint. And then already now I'm nervous because I'm kind of 0-1. And so then I pull into the second checkpoint where they actually conduct the test. And so I'm sitting there, and you know me, you and I, JJ, we talk all the time about our appreciation of history.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying this to trivialize anything. I'm actually saying this to kind of like explain myself a little bit. When I was sitting there in this tent waiting for this, kind of like the history of the moment we're in sort of hit me. And I was like, you know, here we are. Like, there's people in, like, you've seen E.T. before, right? You know, the end of E.T., like the people in those kind of suits, like they're all around us.
Not suits.
I was like, this is a surreal moment in American life, in global life. And like Jack and Luke, my kids are going to be learning about this in school in 10 years, 15 years, whatever it is. And so I was like, you know what? I kind of want to document this. So picked up the phone, very nonchalant, click, picture, second freak out. Excuse me, sir, what? Oh my God, what? there's no flash photography here. You need to delete that photo immediately. And I right away got rid of it. And I was just like, how many more things can I screw
this
up
is,
here?
Sorry, this is so you. You're going to have a swab stuck up your nose right. to check if you've got a disease, and you think you're Louis Theroux.
Like, I'm not trying
to. You're a gonzo journalist out there. Like, you're ridiculous.
But I didn't see any signs to suggest that you shouldn't. Is it a commonly known thing? I don't know. So I felt like I just like completely butchered it. Like, I felt so bad as I left that like these doctors, like the last thing they probably want is like, you know, their lives have been so difficult having to do this day in, day out and put themselves at risk. And like, here's this buffoon rolling his windows down. He's taking pictures. And like, and afterward, and when she came over to us, she's like, is this your first test? And I was like, yeah, we kind of opened our circle up a little bit at a wedding. And afterwards, Amanda was like,
you said it like that.
I volunteered that.
I went to a wedding and our circles were opened up a bit.
And afterwards, Amanda was like, why would you tell them that? That is probably the last thing that they want to hear that people are doing. And I was like,
your eyes, look at this moron, another buffoon who can't stick by the rules.
I know, but I tried to justify it as being like, well, you're right. But I'm also, hopefully she heard me say that and thought, oh, well, these people are very responsible. They attended a wedding. And the first thing they did afterwards was come get a test to make sure they don't have it and spread it to more people. So I think I could salvage that one. But after I left, I just felt so bad. Like, I just handled everything wrong. Hopefully, obviously, we don't have it. I don't think we do. It was kind of out of precaution.
I hope you tell the truth to Jack and Luke when the time comes. What was the pandemic like of 2020? What was it like getting tested, Papa? And I hope you honestly go, well, son, it was, as most things are in my life, kind of awkward.
And I bungled every step of it along the way.
And a little bit embarrassing, too.
So that's... That was my day today, but should we get into some of the soccer there?
I think we should do that. Yeah.
So we're going to talk with Stefano Fusaro in a moment, who's down in the Orlando bubble. Before we get to that, MLS is back. We are on the eve of its return. By the time you're listening to this, it may have already returned. I guess we'll start with the not so fun parts. Look, you kind of have to call it like you see it. This tournament is not off to a great start. From multiple angles, obviously FC Dallas being forced out of the tournament due to an excessive number of positive tests. Now Nashville SC is kind of dealing with a similar situation, not to the extent of FC Dallas. They're still in the tournament, but their opening match against Chicago has been postponed. You have some key players who will not be taking part. Most notably, it's now been confirmed. We've kind of been talking about it for weeks now as if it was like common knowledge, but it's now been confirmed. No Carlos Vela in the tournament for LAFC. And then JJ, just before we went on, I was reading one of our favorite guys, Bradley Wright Phillips, who's now with LAFC. He was on the Sports Bubble podcast. I don't know if you saw this quote from him, but he was talking about the tournament going on with the current climate, global pandemic climate that's going on in the U.S. simultaneously. And he says, I don't really care how I come across here because it's no secret to me. I just think it's a little bit stupid, if I'm being honest. I just think we could have waited like the rest of the leagues and you train until you're able to play and that's it. He said, he goes on here. I'll read a little bit more from him. He said, you've taken us all to a place now in a bubble where you got to stay in your room away from your families. You know, some people got some real life issues, you know, to deal with. And you just got to go and leave your family for how long, you know, but I guess money talks, my friend. And, you know, I can't criticize him because it is an issue that I kind of brought up on our last podcast was this idea of, are we sure we're ready to be doing this? I still don't know the answer to that. It doesn't matter. You know, here we go full steam ahead. But he raises, you know, I think his points that he raises are valid.
Of course they're valid, Andrew. I was reading an article today about sports and the idea of a bubble, and this was from April 16th. You can't think of it as airtight, said Dr. William Schaffner, a Vanderbilt University professor who is an expert in preventative medicine and infectious diseases, because it won't be, right? So it's not possible to do this in an airtight environment, in a totally safe environment, and it's definitely not possible to do it in a country that last week hit 50,000 daily infections. Like, we have not made the progress we needed to make for any of this to happen with the kind of safety and surety we would want. But what are we supposed to do? That's the question. Like, I think, like, I honestly believe what Taylor Twellman said was right the other day on SportsCenter. If you look at this country's approach, it's been, in terms of reopening, it's been a state-by-state thing. So how are we expected to have teams coming from across the country into a bubble who have gone through an isolation situation, a social distancing situation that is absolutely equal together and come into this bubble the same? There was no countrywide universal approach to this. And what are we getting? We're getting pockets and hot spots in different states, and some states are further on than others, and some states are way behind. And that's just the way it is. Like, we never set ourselves up to be in a position to have sports back, but we're gonna have them.
We're gonna
plow ahead, and that's it.
Yeah, and look, it's almost fair. Like, I keep wanting to compare the various sport restarts in the United States to what we've seen with the Bundesliga and the Premier League. And we'll talk more specifically about the Premier League's restart when we get to Man of the Match later in the show. But you really can't make that comparison. Like, the United States, it's just such a big, sprawling country. I guess for whatever reason, it's just been tough to demand every part of the country to be at the same place in terms of their handle on this virus.
There hasn't been an attempt to demand everybody do the same thing.
That's also true. You're right.
So here we are, and we have some choices to make. And it looks as if we're going to go ahead. And I do understand the sentiments of Bradley Wright Phillips. Mm-hmm. But MLS is staring at $1 billion of a loss this season anyway. And there's no point saying otherwise. What he said is true. Money matters, and they want to play this tournament. They want to have football on the field this summer, and that's what we're going to have starting tomorrow.
Yep. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's take a super quick break. When we come back on the other side of it, Stefano Fusaro will join us from the bubble. Sounds like Biodome, right? Don't you picture like Pauly Shore, Stephen Baldwin to be down there just like hanging out? It's like Biosphere 3.
I'm wearing a Pauly Shore shirt right now, to be honest with you.
What does that mean?
That's the kind of thing he'd wear, right?
A Hawaiian shirt kind of look? Yeah, I guess so. I don't really remember what he wears. I think about it often, but it escapes me. At any rate, we'll be back in a moment. Stefano Fusaro from the bubble in Orlando will join us to kind of give us a feel of what it's like down there. Don't go anywhere. All right, JJ, we continue now. We're talking MLS, so let's actually go to the bubble. And talk with somebody who's there who can kind of give us like the boots on the ground feel for how it's all been so far. We go to Stefano Fusaro from ESPN, who joins us now. Stefano, what's up, man? How are you?
Doing well. Can't complain. We're here working hard and definitely in a crazy and surreal environment that none of us have ever experienced. But we're good, thankfully.
I've heard they're renaming Sports Center to Stefano Center. Is that true?
It's what it feels like nowadays. No question. And it's funny, right? Because we were going from the times of quarantine and times of no sports, where, you know, our job is to be at SportsCenter. We're SportsCenter reporters. And I was on SportsCenter probably 3 times in the last 4 months. And just in day one, I was on SportsCenter 5 times in the day. So in one day, I made up 3 months. So it's definitely a crazy time, man.
Yeah. You mentioned how the feel down there is somewhat surreal. We'll get to that in a sec. But I guess I want to start with what's like the most important topic, and that is everybody's health. I saw Nani says that he feels safe inside the bubble. Do you?
I do. We were talking with this with my crew, my producer, and my cameraman that are here, that we have felt safe since being here. It's masks at all times. The only time I take off my mask is when I'm in my room or when I'm on TV. And besides that, I mean, it's not – the masks have to be on at all times. There is signage for social distancing. There is hand sanitizer everywhere you go. I do feel that the protocols put in place are here to make us as safe as possible. And I don't feel unsafe. And I think that if you're following the rules and doing the right things and keeping your distance and really just being careful of who you come in contact with, I feel almost safer inside here with all of us being tested every other day than I have at home going to the grocery store or going, you know, to anywhere at this point.
the mood of the players, if you can judge it from what you see, how would you describe it right now?
So the players, I understand why there is a little more anxiety amongst the players. Now, I do feel that that's changed over the last couple of days when they've seen that FC Dallas, that they were able to contain all the positive tests. Yes, it grew amongst that team. They're able to contain it to the team. Nashville, the same thing. They're having their issues with 5 positive tests, 4 inconclusive tests, but they're containing it. And I think that with the league doing that, you're seeing players be a lot more, you know, kind of a sigh of relief, if you will, and now just focusing on getting on the field. But the players are the ones that I think would be even more at risk than us, right? We don't come very close to them. We're in the same hallways, but we make sure to keep our distance from the players. The last thing we need is you know, ESPN reporter contaminates player and he can't be on the field, and then, yeah, that, we don't want that. But they're the ones that are traveling in pods. They try to keep themselves to only their own teammates. There are rules for the elevator. You know, they don't want any players of opposite teams in the same elevator. As well as when I'm in an elevator, they don't want players in an elevator. So being very careful with that. But they are the ones that I guess are more at risk because they're the ones that are traveling in pods. They're the ones that are closer together. And if one guy gets it, it's going to be very difficult to stop the spread amongst their own teammates.
Stefano, I heard you use the word relief there. Was that in reference to FC Dallas? Because I was curious what the player reaction was to the announcement that they were going to be leaving the tournament. Was it relief? Was it shock? Was it disappointment? How was that news received?
Amongst the FC Dallas players?
Or amongst everybody down there, media, players from other teams. I would assume the FC Dallas players were probably disappointed. But what about, I'm kind of curious what the reaction was of like the league and other teams that were going to have to be playing against them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is a lot of empathy, I think, and it kind of just feeling bad for the team that got here to play and not being able to play. Look, as far as FC Dallas is concerned, their players, I think that they're happy that this is the situation. Now, they're stuck here. They're still here. They're not going to be leaving here until those players that tested positive come back with 2 negative tests, at least 2 negative tests. So they're going to be stuck here for at least a little bit longer. I did have a chance to speak to Lucha Gonzalez, the head coach of FC Dallas, maybe a couple hours ago. And he told me that, look, like soccer wasn't even on their minds at this point. Their sole goal was to really try to get their guys to recover and the health and safety of their players and the one coach who's sick. And as far as their reaction, I think that it is relief that they're out of the situation now. They don't have to worry about having to get on the field. All they're worrying about is trying to get home. There's a lot of other coaches and teams that just really feel for them and are kind of just saying the right things as far as, you know, we feel for you guys, we're here, but we need to focus on us and continue to do the things that we need to do so we don't end up in that situation.
Stefano, I have a question about something that I think the Bundesliga and the Premier League and La Liga got away with was the fact that for the viewer, it was still the same stadium. When you'd come and watch the game, you could tell it was St. James's Park or Old Trafford or wherever. How visually is this tournament going to look?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be different. I will tell you this. It's going to be a unique viewing experience. I mean, at the very least, for the casual, I mean, I know that you guys will be watching. I know that the diehard fans are going to be watching no matter what. But I feel like even for the casual viewer, we're going to have a lot of resources that we don't usually have for soccer broadcasts on ESPN and in reality on any network. Just Game 1 is going to have 20 cameras. Think about that, 20 cameras for a broadcast. You're going to have views and perspectives that you don't usually have. There's going to be microphones embedded in the field. So at the center circle, there will be 2 microphones in the ground catching all the audio that's coming. You'll have two microphones embedded in the ground in front of each of the technical areas. Thankfully, there's going to be a delay because there's going to be a lot of words that aren't allowed on national TV. But I think it's going to add a very cool perspective to that. Now, yes, there's not going to be the stands aren't around. There's going to be a lot of virtual signage around the pitch. There actually is not virtual. There actually is real signage and ads around the pitch like you would see at any normal stadium in the United States or in Europe. But I think it's going to be a cool perspective and a cool view of something where all the resources that maybe they've wanted to use on soccer and football broadcasts that they're just not able to because of the environment and the stadium itself, they're going to be able to do that now. And I think it's just going to be a very cool viewing experience, something that we're not used to.
Stefano, I wanted to ask you about, you kind of mentioned it in passing before, but I wanted to go slightly deeper on the situation with Nashville. I saw their match against Chicago has been postponed. Five players testing positive. I was wondering if you could kind of give us A, the latest on their situation, and B, can you make it clear to us kind of once and for all, if you know, are players testing positive after arriving at the bubble? Like, are players mingling and somehow passing it within there? Is that what they're kind of suggesting?
So a short answer is no. All of the tests that have arrived and they've performed contact tracing after the positive tests, all of the positive tests, the initial ones, are all off of the plane. So upon arrival, we had to all be tested and then quarantined for 24 hours. And those five positive tests that Nashville got, were all of them were upon arrival. So the first test that they took and then immediately quarantined. Now, there's also four inconclusive tests with Nashville, and that's why they're performing more additional testing. And the league has said that they're going to really evaluate their participation in the tournament moving forward, depending on what happens with that additional testing. I mean, that's where we are with Nashville. They are quarantined as well. The players who are have tested positive have been isolated in another wing of the hotel. And the players, the rest of the traveling party for Nashville is also quarantined in their own hotel rooms, just as an abundance of caution, right? Because they don't want to have that incubation period where they might not test positive, and then all of a sudden they do test positive, and then they've been walking around the hotel infecting everyone. So it goes back to what we were saying. It's all about the protocols following the positive tests. And if they do feel comfortable with how that those protocols are working, and being able to confine it and contain it to the certain players that have already tested positive.
I was listening to Bruce Arena speak just before we recorded this, and he was talking about not so much COVID-19 as a major concern, but the heat and humidity. How bad is it down there?
It's hot, and I'm a Miami native, so I'm used to this weather. But I'll tell you what, it is bad. It is 95 degrees. It is 90% humidity. And those 9 a.m. games are going to be brutal. They're going to be brutal for everybody. But look, I've talked to players about it, and I've talked to coaches about it. And, you know, we're probably going to be seeing two drink breaks rather than the one that we've been seeing in the Premier League and in the other leagues around the country, around Europe. But, yeah, I mean, it's something that they're – this is also why the Nashville game is getting postponed, why some of the other games have been postponed. They need to allow these teams time to train in this weather.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these players aren't used to this. I mean, they're not used to playing in this type of heat and this type of humidity. So it's almost an unfair advantage if you allow San Jose, who's been here for 12 days already, and they've been able to train, you know, I mean, how many times? They've trained sometimes twice a day in this heat, but they're ready. You know what I mean? And Toronto just arrived yesterday. And Vancouver just arrived yesterday. So that's why the need to postpone these games, because they have to give them sufficient training time in this ridiculously hot weather.
One thing I was kind of wondering about, like, so this bubble atmosphere, I know I saw one of your reports the other day where you kind of described the feel there as eerie in some ways. And hearing it described, it has like a very like Black Mirror feel to it in terms of the setting. And I'm just wondering, amongst all that, do you get the sense that players are excited? Like, is there a feeling of, all right, let's go win this thing now? Like, does that exist in the bubble?
Now, yes. I think that the eerie feeling was really at the beginning. The day before the FC Dallas news broke, the original six positive tests broke. And I feel like at that point, there was only about seven teams here. And it was eerie because it kind of didn't see a whole lot of movement, people not knowing exactly where to go, what to do, whether to interact, whether not to interact. And it was just kind of an off feeling. I remember walking into the hotel, it was noon, and I walked into the hotel and I kind of looked around, and I know I was in the right place because there was a driver that was sent. I mean, we couldn't even rent cars to drive to the hotel. There was a driver set for us to be shuttled over here. And it was kind of, I walked in and looking around like, am I in the right spot? Like, is this it? And it was. And I think that was how you were seeing it. And then the news broke with FC Dallas, and you had the players really nervous at this point. We actually were talking with Chris Wondolowski when the news broke. And we kind of told Chris Wondolowski about the news. And the San Jose Earthquakes were scheduled to go on a mini golf outing, I believe, which is on the property. They canceled that, and they quarantined themselves in the room. And you kind of saw everybody go, and there was nobody around the hotel for about a day and a half. Nobody. Now that we're starting to see kind of what happened with FC Dallas, what's happening with Nashville, and the fact that it's contained and we're a day away from games, now you're seeing that enthusiasm. Now you're seeing that energy and that will and just wanting to get out on the pitch and do what they love. And that also has come with captains and coaches making sure that their players are doing the right thing and following the protocol so they don't get sick and they can do what they love.
Is it your sense that once we, it's just a case of getting this tournament started, and once the ball gets rolling, it's going to be fine?
Yeah, I mean, that's the sense I get. And I know talking with people here, I think that it's that Wednesday's the hurdle, right? Wednesday's the day that they just need to get past. And if, again, is that saying that there's not going to be any more positive tests? Of course not. You cannot predict that. But I think that once they get the ball rolling and they get that first game going, and they can get them a little bit of a momentum going as far as how this tournament's going to go, I feel like, and of course, if they stay safe, this will be something that hopefully will be in the rearview mirror, and they can continue to focus on the football, and we can continue to focus on the games, which is what we all want to do, right? I mean, at the end of the day, I'm a reporter who reports about sports, and I've been reporting about COVID-19 for the last week, so I'm excited to start talking soccer.
And I'm glad that you bring that up, because I wanted to end on that. Like, let's actually get a soccer thought from you before we let you go.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously this tournament's going to look a little bit different in terms of personnel. No Carlos Vela, obviously no Joseph Martinez. It feels a little bit up for grabs just with those players not being here, with the format being what it is. Who do you kind of – like, who do you have your eye on for this tournament as who we should perceive to be the favorites?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult just because – I think there's going to be rust no matter what. I think we've seen it in the other leagues in Europe. I've seen when they've begun. You've seen kind of players not being at 100% and taking a little bit to get their legs under them. I do think that there is the league, this tournament is up for grabs, but I do expect there to be some teams that are going to kind of shine. And I do, in my opinion, one of the favorites, in my opinion, will be NYCFC. I think they have a squad that's prepared for this type of tournament. I think that they've quietly kind of under the radar become one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference, and I believe that they are set up with their talent and with their leadership and with their new coach Ronnie Delia, who's even in the two short games in the two games that we saw were very impressive. I think that that's a team that you're going to have to watch in the East, and in the Western Conference, I mean, without Vela, it's difficult to go with LAFC, even though they're still the betting favorite in Vegas. I'm going to pick Seattle. I think Seattle and their experience and coming off of their tournament and winning the MLS Cup, I think it's going to be – I think they're the team that is most prepared to come into a tournament like this, take the punches when they're thrown and be able to deliver some of those blows when they need to.
Well, good stuff, man. We look forward to seeing more of your reporting on SportsCenter, and hopefully we'll be able to catch up with you again as this tournament actually progresses. Good stuff, dude.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it again.
Our thanks to Stefano. Great information from down there. Hopefully he stays safe. Hopefully everyone does. And hopefully, like I asked about the excitement level there. Like,
this is meant to be fun.
Yeah, I hope that does return. Like,
I think it will.
Almost like, what's the point of it? Well, I guess money is the point. But like, that's what you want this to. Like, I've been genuinely excited, as frustrating as Tottenham matches have been at times. Like, in the lead up to their games, I've been so starved for sports and for soccer. They're like, I've been truly excited for Tottenham. I really have, honestly.
Until the game kicks off, and then you're like, oh.
I'm excited for them playing this Thursday. I'm excited for the North London Derby. Like, I don't even like. Look, yeah, well, you're right. Then the game happens, and but the excitement matters, and I just hope that feeling, like, I think once, what the heck was that? What is going on? I hear sirens. People are buzzing up your apartment. This is unbelievable. This is just unprofessional.
I have no idea what the hell is going on.
Highest order.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm in an apartment in Brooklyn. That's how we tease the show, Andrew. And sometimes things get real in Brooklyn.
What's getting real? Somebody ordered.
Someone's buzzing our door to get in. Some kind of a delivery man. Unbelievable. And I'm not responsible for the sirens outside. Good Lord.
This is just not professional. This is not a professional broadcast.
It's not professional. I've lost my train of thought, but these are the times we live in. This is the new normal.
All right. So here we go. Like we talked about a moment ago, we want to at least discuss a little bit of the tournament and like the soccer that we're about to see that we said is the fun part. So let's do that. I've got a few questions here. We'll go over them. and hopefully we'll have you at least somewhat ready, kind of like a crash course into the MLS's back cup. And the first question I wanted to ask you, I don't really have much of an answer to this, but I'm curious if you do. So this tournament, this is all just like so different, and it's going to be so quick. Like, but we're also told that this matters. This is a trophy, and the teams, everybody wants to win this. Could any coach who's like conceivably on the hot seat coming into the season, could any coach actually lose their job with a bad showing in this tournament?
Andrew, I went back and forth on this one. So we got to realize that, you know, the points accrued during this tournament in the group stage will carry on, we believe, into the regular season that they're going to try and start up, culminating with MLS Cup. So conceivably, a bad run in this and then a bad run in your regular season, I think could get you fired. But this tournament on its own, after not being able to be with your players for the last 4 months, almost limited training in this really intense month-long tournament, in with all the things that go with it in terms of the social isolation, in terms of just how weird it's going to be, like, that would be outrageous to sack a manager just based on that. I really don't think they could.
You have to be right. Like, to me, it would feel very cruel and unfair for this to be. I mean, if you have a manager on the hot seat, like, I think it's fair if it's a good team who underachieves here. I think it's fair for it to be a strike against the manager, and like, if they continue to struggle during the season, you know, this is fair game to be used, like, when he sits down with the sporting director being like, look, you underperformed at MLS's back tournament. Like, I think that's okay. But I can't imagine, you know, if like Atlanta goes out in the group stage and they're like, Frank DeBoer, have a seat, you're gone. Like, no, I'm not. Like, that to me is silliness. I could not imagine that. So no. I think you're right on that. All right. I was also, this is another thing that we talked about with Stefano a little bit, and I know you've kind of been on this big time in terms of the setting in which these games are taking place. So I was curious for you specifically on this one, when you're watching these games, how long do you think it's going to take for you to feel normal watching one of these games played?
It shouldn't take that long. We've kind of had that run in with the Bundesliga and the Premier League with no fans, so we figured that one out. And watching NWSL Challenge Cup is a pretty good way to kind of hone yourself and get yourself ready for what looks like a training ground scenario, but is actually competitive games. Once you see a few games, Andrew, once you get into the rhythm of having no fans, and also your surrounds, the people who've played FIFA, on most of the FIFAs, there's like a stadium training site that's just got the pitch, and sometimes you can put a hedge around it or whatever, and you play on that. And people who've seen that can get something of an idea what this is going to look like. I actually think if you get stuck into the tournament, you like say, right, I'm investing in this, as you should. I'm watching the 9 a.m.s. I'm going to plan my day around watching MLS Cup. Our MLS is back.
Don't you dare call it that.
No, the MLS is back tournament. How dare I even mention the cup? You'll get in on it very quick. You really will. Soccer fans are able to adapt.
I agree. Like any one of us, I feel like, have turned on ESPNU or the ACC network or any one of these and seen like a college soccer game that's kind of being played in a not so different environment as to some of what you're going to be seeing with this. So like, it's weird, but I think it'll normalize for people quickly.
Now look, if I turn on my TV and I see like the gridiron imposed upon the pitch, and I see like home of the Braves or something like that, like a high school thing, then I would obviously be quite upset. But this is going to look like a proper soccer field.
Yeah.
You know when you switch on the college games and you're like, oh, I'm excited to see this, and you're like, oh, that's disappointing. There's an end zone. I never asked for that.
Right.
But this is going to look great. This is going to look good.
Yeah. One thing, by the way, kind of semi-related. So early on in like the pandemic, when people were working from home for the first time and all that stuff, I saw a stat where apparently there's an actual like quantity that you can place to how long it takes for a human being to feel normal, to like adapt to an abnormal situation if they're in it every day. Do you get, you want to guess how long it takes?
I don't know, actually. Three days, 4 days.
No, I was told three. What I saw was 3 weeks.
Oh,
how it takes for something abnormal for you to adapt to it and it feel normal. If you're immersed in it for 3 weeks, then that thing will become normal.
I've become accustomed to the shape of your head very, very quickly.
It probably took about 3 weeks though.
No, with your hair right now, it's not regular.
I don't know. People really seem to have a problem with it. People are like offended by my appearance. It's kind of unnerving for me, especially because I kind of have grown to enjoy this hair. I've never had my hair this long, but
I think it looks fine. It looks like it takes some kind of holding down, if you know what I mean. Some kind of strong product.
There's nothing in it. I don't know. People's reaction to it I can tell you it hasn't been pleasant. And quite frankly, it's kind of affected my confidence and self-esteem. All right, here we go. Now kind of more into like the meat and bones here, JJ. I know everyone obviously wants to win this. Like that's a given. But can you think, I hope this makes sense. Can you think of a team that you think would like really want to win this?
Well, I've combined that in typically I can't answer a straight question. I've kind of combined it into two things. I think the San Jose Earthquakes would absolutely love to win this tournament. And I also think that I would love them to win this tournament because they've got, you know, they've got some history in MLS and the last few seasons have not been great. I really like the appointment of Mateus Almeida and like his old school approach to preseason. Like he probably enjoys this right now. I mean, if there wasn't a pandemic, he'd have them in the Andes Mountains doing like oxygen training or altitude training or whatever it is. I like his unique ideas. Like, you know, he's is this even old school going absolute man for man when you don't have the ball? He just seems like a guy apart in this league. And, you know, I know it wasn't a great introduction to MLS life last season, was pretty up and down, but I would absolutely think that they as a franchise, as an organization that has like this good history in MLS going back to the start, that they would love, absolutely love to be, you know, to be a cup winner here. And it might be a tournament that actually suits an uber fit team, a team that can handle the humidity. I've also got, I know I'm returning to a theme on this podcast of late, but Chris Wondolowski, imagine the eyes of the MLS on this tournament for a solid month. Wando heads into the final as top scorer in the tournament. It's extra time. It's 1-1. The ball falls to him in the 6-yard box.
Let it go, man.
No, what I'm saying is this time it's set up for him for redemption.
Oh, so that will be redemption. All will be forgotten. Okay.
No, but look, go back to what I said.
I hope that he does succeed. I like the guy, but man, this is like 4 straight weeks we brought up this poor guy in that moment against Belgium. Unbelievable.
Well, he's going to have the eyes of the nation on him again, Andrew. So,
all right. Well, here's who I went with, JJ. I think NYCFC would really, really love to win this.
Oh, so, yeah, they would.
Like, let's just look at their recent. Their whole history is recent history, but like, let's look at their history. Last year, Eastern Conference number one seed out in the conference semifinals of the MLS Cup. 2018, third in the East, out in the conference semis. 2017, they're the two seed out in the conference semis to Columbus. 2016, again, the two seed obliterated 7-0 on aggregate by Toronto in the conference semis. They're always good, but they're never, for whatever reason, quite good enough to get past that second round, especially obviously in tournament format.
And remember last season against Toronto at Citi Field. Oh, what a disaster, the way they collapsed late on. And who was it made that tackle? I'm trying, was it Matarita? I can't even remember who made the tackle. Oh, it was absolutely dreadful. And Toronto scored the penalty and just iced it.
Yeah, it was completely and utterly gut-wrenching for them. And, you know, the thing with them in particular is, why I think this you know, it feels like Stefano said, there's a winnability here for NYCFC. He mentioned them specifically as a team that could be built for this. There's a lot of cohesion in terms of players coming back from last year's top seed in the Eastern Conference. Yes, it is a new manager in Ronnie Dellia, but you know, maybe this break helps them in some way in terms of him. Well, maybe, I don't know. We'll see. What do you mean? No, like, you know, but here's the other thing, you know, they've always lived in this Red Bull shadow, you know, both in terms of history and in terms of general success against one another. But like, what a feeling it would be for them to get some silverware here in a winnable tournament. And, you know, their cross city rivals are still like, it's still eluded them for so long. And NYCFC, like, there's a chance here that they could do it. I just think on many levels, this would be just something that they would love to have. So yeah, NYCFC. All right.
I wasn't being ignorant by saying, you know, Ronnie Dellia has had all this time and, you know, to sync with his team. I know what you're saying, but I was listening to Bruce today and Bruce has just changed my mind on that. He said one of the big challenges is these guys will have played no meaningful games in so long. We don't know what we're going to get.
That is true. And like we said, the weather, how fit they are. You're right. Like, there are variables here that are like, what if, you know, Hebert goes down like early in the tournament? Like, it's hard to account for stuff like that. And sadly, like, guys are probably going to get hurt. That is a given. That's a given of a normal season. But like this one, it feels like it's going to be even more of a storyline. So yes, having said that, all of our predictions here are nonsense. Take them with a grain of salt for whatever they're worth. But we thought it would still just be fun to talk soccer. All right, here's your next one, JJ. Give me a team or a player, whatever you want, that you have a bad feeling about. Such a mean question.
I'm going to go to Group E. It's Atlanta, Cincinnati, the Red Bulls, and Columbus. And FC Cincinnati just stand out like a sore thumb. Looking at the group, in terms of just the managers, every other manager, you know, be it Frank de Boer at Atlanta, at the Red Bulls, Chris Armas, Columbus, you know, they have got their established coaches with a lot of experience of MLS. And here we are in Cincinnati with Jaap Stam, who's appointed during a pandemic. And I know why he's been appointed. He's been appointed because he did a pretty, I actually think he was treated unfairly at Reading. I thought he did a really good job there. He's appointed also because this is a team that leaks goals and he's going to look to organize things. And he needs everything to gel. He's had very little time with his squad and he's coming in with, I think, the weakest squad in Group E comfortably. I think those teams, every other team is so much better. I don't see how they don't take a hammering. I really don't. Now, if Alan Cruz hits the ground running, Kubo, you know, you're gonna look at the new signings that he's got and they need to gel too. But Andrew, they shipped goals last season. They're going to ship goals in this tournament too, I think. I think they're going to struggle and it's going to be, look, maybe it brings the whole group and collective together, but I just don't see them doing anything right now in this tournament for Jaap Stam.
I'm not going to argue with you on that. They would be on my list as well. For me here, I'm not going to take the LAFC bait, even though they're without Vela. I still think that they're loaded. They should be one of the favorites still in my mind. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to take the Atlanta United FC bait, even though they're without Joseph Martinez after his torn ACL. I still think they're loaded in their own right and should be considered one of the favorites in the East. But I am going to go low hanging fruit, and I'm looking at you, Vancouver. Oh, Vancouver. Ooh. Oh, ooh. Yeah, on the back of two bad seasons, last year in particular, their manager, right, Mark Dos Santos, he's been in charge of the club 38 games. He's won just 9 of them. So, mm-hmm, like, already we're coming from a point of, this may not go great for us. And then FC Dallas drops out of the competition in their group, and you think, oh, well, who knows? Maybe that could wind up being some kind of escape route out of the group and into the knockout stage. But then, JJ, you log on ESPN FC earlier today, and you see this news that 5 Vancouver players will not be participating in this tournament. And it's not just any players. It's 3 of them in particular, Lucas Cavallini, Toussaint Ricketts, and Freddie Montero. Those are 3 crucial players to a team that is already not that highly thought of.
That's bad.
So certainly reasons for concern.
I was going to try and be clever with you, Andrew. and say that they of the teams in MLS, Vancouver have the youngest average age at 24.1. That's the average squad age. And in the heat and humidity and the games coming thick and fast and tournament style, that would suit them. But no, losing quality players does not suit anybody.
I'd be curious to look up whether or not age is actually a factor in terms of injury rate. Like, look, obviously a guy who's in his upper 30s, I would think is
more,
but like a team whose average age is 24 versus a team whose average age is 26 or 27. Like, do you actually think that makes a difference? I don't know.
I think I would doubt between 24 and 27. So the young average age is 24.1. That's Vancouver. And then the elder statesman, which isn't that old, in Portland is 27.28. I don't think it makes that much of a difference in there, but I think individually players above the 28, 29 mark, not that they're become more injury prone in a kind of a regular week to week scenario, but where you've got games like this coming fast, I think maybe with a high volume of games, injuries become more of a problem. I know a guy I can ask about that though.
Yeah. Why don't you do that?
I will ask him and I will report back.
Sounds like a plan. All right. And then one more here for you. The opposite of the one we just asked. Give me a team or player that you have a good feeling about.
Again, I just can't answer a question in a straight fashion at all. I've gone with a coach, right, Andrew.
That's fine.
If anybody knows what it's like to be a player in a tournament and win, and people are going to be shocked that I'm going to say this, but it's Thierry Henry. And Montreal, the impact were showing signs of life under Henry before COVID struck. I think Wanyama comes in there, much to my surprise, but will bolster that midfield. You've got Max Urruti and Bojan in attack. Maybe this Montreal team will be equipped to execute on the break, because certainly what we saw in CONCACAF Champions League and in the opening games of MLS was that they didn't have a lot of the ball they could contain, and then they were really good on the break. Maybe they can surprise some people. Again, I'm looking at their average age, 25.5. Maybe this means nothing, but they should have the legs in the heat. I just have a funny feeling about Montreal, and I think maybe a short month-long tournament, I think it might suit Henry. And like, they weren't great. They had the loss to Olympia at home in the CONCACAF Champions League. I know they weren't perfect, but they were better than I thought they'd be. And maybe he can get something out of them and they'll be a surprise. They've got the derby game with Toronto in the group as well. That's going to be interesting. Yeah. I'm going to give Henry a break because I have not been impressed by it with him as a coach, either at Monaco. Obviously, he had the job with the Belgian national team as a selector or as an assistant manager, but yeah, I'm going to give him a break. I think maybe they can do something.
Wow. Va, va, voom.
Indeed.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, JJ, our Canadian listeners are really going to enjoy this podcast because we just did Vancouver. Now you just did Montreal. The team that I have a good feeling about will stay in Canada and we'll actually stay in that group. And I go with Toronto FC because I still believe that they are one of the most talented clubs in the league. Now they have a healthy Michael Bradley back, as half of our audience rolls their eyes, but he is still a good player. I don't care what anyone says.
Across this great land, phones that are tuned to caught offside have been thrown out the car window.
I don't care. Like, I will die on this hill that he is still a good player.
RIP our mentions.
Whatever, man. But he had ankle surgery, wasn't expected to be ready for much of the season, but now with this delay, he will be ready for this. So Bradley's back. The question mark is potentially on Jozy Altidore. Greg Vanney said, it seems like they're going, I saw the term load management being used. And Greg Vanney said that Altidore is not going to be ready for the first game after only pretty much just recently rejoining training after coming out of a mandatory quarantine, flying back into Canada. He had been allowed to train separately in Florida. And then when he rejoined the team, there's a mandatory 14-day quarantine period when you go from the U.S. into Canada. So he only got back to train with the team, I think, on July 3rd. So the turnaround, especially for him, a guy who, he's dealt with his fair share of injuries at all ages. They do have to be careful with him. But I think Vanney is kind of playing the long game here with Jozy. This team, I think they know that they're good. I think they know that they have what it takes to get out of the group. And then once they do that, you know, presumably Josie will enter the mix fresh, ready to go. You know, and look at the rest of the team. Alejandro Pozuelo was one of the revelations of the league last year. Incredible talent. I guess the question mark right now is Pablo Piatti, designated player, probably going to be playing on the right, kind of then like tucks inside a little bit. He's dealt with a number of injuries in recent years, but if he's healthy, you know, he could be this kind of next difference maker that it seems like Toronto always has one in the tank. And who knows, maybe we exit this tournament with it being him. So I don't know. I don't know if they'd be my pick to win at all, but I got a good feeling about Toronto FC.
Well, you've laid out the case quite wonderfully for them, my friend. Oh. May I ask you a question now before we get out of the MLS section of our wonderful podcast?
Of course.
We never picked our group of death.
Oh. Hmm. Yeah, you're right. That's a good question. Let me pull up all the, do you have one? I'm going to pull, I don't have the group in front of me right now.
Yeah, I'll pick my one right now because it kind of jumped out to me. Like I can see people looking at, say, Group B, Atlanta, Cincinnati, Red Bulls, and Columbus as group of death. But I think there's like, I think Group F has that group of death. Now, I agree with you. Carlos Vela not being involved with LAFC diminishes them, but not to the point where they're an irrelevancy. It's LAFC, the Galaxy, Houston, and Portland.
Isn't that Group D?
Is it?
I thought so.
No, I've down Group D as RSL, Sporting KC, Colorado, and Minnesota.
Maybe I'm on some fraud website here that has them listed incorrectly. But either way, though, whatever the letter is, you're probably right. But I would agree. I think that.
Oh wait, hang on. Oh yeah, maybe. But the group is the same. Sorry, group D then. I'm looking at the website. One website has it listed as D. So, okay, D. Whatever group has LAFC, LA Galaxy, Portland, and the Houston Dynamo in it, that is my group of death.
That's definitely it. It's certainly not the only difficult one.
No.
I would also suggest, I think Group B, which we have touched on, Montreal, Toronto, DC, and New England, I think that one could be difficult as well. Some of the dynamics of these groups, like Group F, Seattle, San Jose, Vancouver, just three teams. But then you look at Group A with six. It all feels a little bit strange. I'm kind of just like, okay, let's just get to the knockout portion of this tournament and be past this sort of clunky, confusing group stage a little bit.
We are in the nether zone, Andrew.
Yeah, we are. But no, I think you're pretty much right. Group E is also Cincinnati, I think, will be the bottom dweller of that group. But boy, that battle there between Atlanta, Columbus, and the Red Bulls, that could be really interesting. Columbus got better during the offseason. Lucas Alarion, that's interesting. And Atlanta, maybe these teams feel like Atlanta is a little bit ripe for the taking with Joseph Martinez not there, with Julian Gressel gone. So that one, that's an interesting group too. That's intriguing.
I didn't listen to the podcast myself, but I saw it noted on Twitter that the Extra Time guys, you know, the MLS's podcast, those guys had Red Bulls finishing in the bottom of Group E.
Really? Below Cincinnati?
Yes.
Ooh.
Which might be overexcitement on the Cincinnati signings and the new manager bounce from Yap Stam. But I can't see it. I think the Red Bulls, even when they're average, like their ability to confound, and they've also got like, whereas Cincinnati, I don't know what their identity is except leaking goals. The Red Bulls definitely have an identity as a team going back years. Yeah. And from manager to manager, that's fairly consistent. But it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Well, here we go. All right. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling ready. I'm excited. You can catch all this on the ESPN family of networks. And we will obviously be talking all about it as the tournament goes along. I'll tell you what, another quick break. We'll be right back. EPL, lots of stuff to get to. You thought last week was Boy Wonder. He's back. Don't go anywhere. And back now, caught offside. This podcast might sound different to people. I don't know. We're recording it right now. I haven't heard it. But like we're using new, this is like very in-depth company jargon, but we're using new podcasting software or whatever. So I don't know. I hope everything comes off sounding the way it's supposed to sound is what I'm saying. I apologize if everything is a mess.
Maybe it makes us sound better.
Maybe. Speaking of which, I meant to tell you something. You'll be very happy about this. And so were our listeners that have been sending me angry tweets. I think I'm getting a microphone, JJ. So this is going to be, and I think it's a quality of microphone that is going to make you sound like you're on an analog phone line.
You make me sick. You wouldn't take my recommendation so we could have the same microphone. You have to try and one up me.
Well, to be honest, I think I think my wife has to get one for her job. So I'm going to just mooch it and use it also.
You know, when I bought that microphone, I was like, just get another one for Andrew.
Yeah, you should have.
But I thought it would have been overbearing of me in the relationship.
When has that ever stopped you with an opinion of me or just like your general way that you handle me? No, that doesn't sound like you at all. These are weird times. All right, here we go. EPL, let's start, JJ, earlier today. Chelsea, they bounced back from the West Ham debacle with a 3-0 over Watford, and then they followed it up today with a really, really enjoyable game, a win over Crystal Palace. Boy, I thought Crystal Palace were going to score at the end of that game, hitting the inside of the post deep in stoppage time.
Yeah,
it just felt like if that game was like 3 minutes longer, it felt like they might have scored two more goals. You felt terrible for him when it ended. A couple things. We'll get to Pulisic in a sec. The first goal that Chelsea scored, this will be quick. So Willian takes it, beats Gary Cahill, who goes down with what looked to be a hamstring injury.
Yeah.
And he plays it in to Olivier Giroud, who taps home. Chelsea go up 1-0. And I wasn't really watching it with volume, so I couldn't quite tell, but it appeared that Crystal Palace players were really, really angry with Willian for continuing to play there. And I just thought, you have got to be kidding me. Like, they are deep in attack. He is basically in the 18-yard box, and there's no one really between him and the keeper.
And also, it's not like Willian saw him go over. Willian was gone past him. You know,
Right.
It was never going to be the wonderful moment of Paulo Di Canio catching the ball and pointing at the prone goalkeeper on the ground and saying, hey, guys, come on. Some things are bigger than football. It's never going to be that.
Right, yeah. And like also too, not only was he past him, but even if he saw Cahill out of the corner of his eye go down, how is Willian to know that this is a serious injury? Like, guy,
but,
you know.
But I don't think it was even. I don't think it was even brought up in the post-match. I don't think anyone talked about it.
So I'm kind of just making this into an issue when it really.
No, do you know what it is, Andrew? It's just like you've just conceded. Watch the reaction of all players when they've just conceded. Not all players, but many players. They're looking around for a scapegoat, or looking around for a way out.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And in fairness to Crystal Palace, I didn't hear a peep about it afterwards. I think it was just kind of like obligatory, like making gestures and hoping maybe that'll come back in their favor later. Then the second goal happened. Oh my God. Christian Pulisic. So I even feel like, as somebody who has watched, I feel like pretty much his whole career, I even feel like from his standards with the U.S. men's national team, we're even now starting to see a different Pulisic. Like this, I think he's the best player on the team. And it's not like Clint Dempsey with Fulham. Like, this is top four contending for a Champions League place, Chelsea. And he, every time he touches the ball, the word that I keep hearing that we've always heard referred to him, but now you're really seeing it, direct, always pushing play forward. All immediately he comes on the ball and defenders are on their heels. They are scared of this guy. I mean, he's turning heads, JJ. This is not just like American fans losing their minds over an American player playing well. This is a guy who is catching the eye, I've got to believe, of fans in England, of fans around the world, with how he's been playing since this restart.
That goal to me was very interesting. And I just want to break it down for people, because it's so good in its execution that when he's taking on the last defender, who was either Ward or MacArthur, I don't know who it was. So he gets the ball to the left inside the penalty box. And the best thing he does, Andrew, is one of the most difficult things to do. He shuffles the ball onto his weaker left foot. But what he does is the shuffle, the way he slides it onto his left foot is one part of a two-part, almost singular motion. Because when he shuffles it onto his left foot, there's no massive backswing. He gets the shot off really quickly, really fast, and with huge power. And it's flashed past the goalkeeper in record time. So the defender is completely put off by the quick touch onto the left, and he doesn't have a chance to recover. Neither does that the goalkeeper really have a chance to get set, even though it's on that right-hand side, and the ball's past him in an instant. There's no backswing, nothing. It was absolutely brilliant. Now, it's funny. I was watching it, and I was screaming, what a great goal. And then I heard Ian Dark, who was on commentary for BT Sport, Ian Dark said, oh, he's near, later on the replay, he said he's nearly ripped the net off. He's hit it so hard with so little backswing on the weaker side. Another thing that's interesting for me was they had been doubling up on him in that first half. It had been MacArthur and Ward. But at that moment, the player who was sitting in, who really should have read that ball across and tried to get back and help, was Wilfried Zaha. And Wilfried Zaha wanted nothing to do with it. Nothing. He didn't even make an attempt at a run to get back. So it was Pulisic isolated 1v1 in the box. And as Frank Lampard notes here, the big thing about Christian Pulisic now, for him at least, is that he's added end product.
Another goal from Christian Pulisic tonight. Just how important a figure, how important a player is he proving to be in this restart phase?
Hugely important, because he's got great talent, we know that. And earlier in the season, at the start, he came here in difficult conditions in terms of hadn't really had a break and early in the season, but he started to play really well for us. And now he's moved his game on another level, not just in how he's going by people, but real end product. You know, you look at around at the top attacking players in the world, they score goals. They score goals regularly to win games. And at the moment, he's doing that. So I'm delighted with him.
I think it's pretty clear what was missing early on. I was happy with his performances. I thought he was contributing, but Lampard really wants that player. I think Lampard, Andrew, is going to want a front three. However he formulates that, that's going to score goals a la Liverpool, or in that mold. So it's going to be Pulisic, Werner, and someone else. And goals are what's going to be the key metric for Lampard, from what I gather there. Also, straight after that, it was funny. He's just scored, and he's on a run again. And he takes on Zaha, who's defending now. Skips past Zaha. Zaha wants nothing to do with it. And you can just see Joel Ward's face. Joel Ward is like, oh, not again. And he goes past Ward, and Ward just hacks him down. Just hacks him down. Because at that point, there was nothing left to do. When he's running in space, it was an interesting point that was made by, who's the ex-Chelsea player that I'm always quoting? Oh my God, why am I blanking on his name? Oh, for God's sake, this is ridiculous. Pat Nevin. Pat Nevin was saying that now what's happening with Pulisic is that he's running at players, and he's running at pace. And that is just, that's such a devastating thing. He's not getting the ball stationary. He is doing what Hazard was doing and going at defenders at pace. And it's a nightmare. It's an absolute nightmare for them.
Yeah. You can tell this guy, and we've seen it the last couple of weeks, this guy's going to draw a lot of penalties, because
But what can you do? What can you do in those scenarios? The best you can try and do is to jockey and show him inside. So angle your body so you're bringing him in the field into traffic. That's the best you can do. And even there, he's still very dangerous. It's a player like Pulisic in this form for defenders is a nightmare. And to be honest with you, Joel Ward did the right thing. Try and boot him early and try and put him off a bit.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, this guy right now, it's a goal or an assist or a drawn penalty. It's every game now. This is, as an American fan, this has been truly, truly fun to watch.
Before we get off this game, though, the Wilfried Zaha scored, like, it's a brilliant strike from about 25 yards out. Absolutely leathers it. But we're looking at this Chelsea team going forward, Andrew, and I know maybe this goal isn't the best example, but it's certainly an example. Kepa Arrizabalaga just diving under the ball. The ball is coming very centrally, and he tries to dive to his left and palm it up over the bar with his right. Doesn't get anywhere near the ball. He's diving under the flight of the ball. And you can see, Andrew, why Chelsea have re-signed Willie Caballero for another season.
Yeah, although I've seen Caballero do that too. Wasn't a Caballero in net for the Christian Eriksen goal that, that looked almost exactly like that.
But imagine the situation Chelsea are in now with such an expensive goalkeeper. What was it, 70 million they paid for him? And now they're, I mean, he hasn't been good. And his shot percentage, his percentage shot saved is not good. No. And even, and in games, you just watch him and you're like, don't fancy him right now.
Yeah, I don't disagree, certainly. Let's see. Let's go through some of these quickly now. Tottenham, Everton yesterday, not a ton to say about the actual game itself. It was, first half was okay. Second half was a bit of a tough watch. The winning goal comes on an own goal. The only thing I'll say about that, I feel like we put some kind of jinx on Michael Keane, like right after we said how good he's been lately. Not that he did anything wrong, but like no one wants to see their name up there, own goal in a 1-0 defeat. Like
right.
That's a bad feeling. And I feel partially responsible. The other thing though, for Tottenham, I'm watching the Everton game, and especially in the first half, I like what they did, and it's what led to the goal, because it's what they didn't do against Sheffield United. When Sheffield United packed in tight against Tottenham, you know, Spurs just pass it around, playing across. It's repelled by Sheffield defense. And that was the whole game. At least it seemed like against Everton, they came out with this mentality of, we're going to try to at least fire shots on net. And even if they don't reach the net, you don't know what kind of bounce it can take. Like, even before the own goal, immediately before that had happened, I forget who it was, somebody took a shot and it took an awkward deflection. Maybe it was Lucas Moura, and it kind of got bounced back out. And then that's what led to the shot that created the own goal. So sometimes I think just do that. Like, even if shots are getting blocked, you don't always know which way the ball is going to roll. Rather than just continuously watching one ball after another, one cross after another get knocked clear, try something different. I kind of wish the Tottenham had at least tried that against Sheffield United. They did it against Everton, and it got them the goal that won the game. But that's not even really the story. The story after this one was the Son, Hugo Lloris coming together at the half. And I think it was particularly jarring to see because it's two guys that I think are viewed as pretty affable figures within the Tottenham world. I mean, Son is just like one of the most smiley footballers you see. And Hugo Lloris, longtime captain, it's just, you know, he's fiery, but I don't know. It's not really a side of him that I've seen before. I texted you afterwards and was like, okay, like, I don't even know how to feel about this, so I need your help. Did Son do anything so egregious from the clips that we saw that would have led to Hugo Lloris acting that way? And I kind of qualified my message to you by saying, I ask you this not knowing anything that's going on behind the scenes. And then what your response to me was essentially what?
My response was, did Son bust a gut to get back? Not really, but he kind of passed him on. It wasn't like there was nobody tracking him. I think it was Kane went with him a little bit and the shot flashed wide. It was the kind of thing you could mention in the locker room. It did not require public and immediate anger from Lloris.
Right, which is what I thought too. And then Jose Mourinho spoke. He said a lot, but here's, I guess, what I've pulled out to be kind of the most important part of his quote on this incident. He said, quote, "It is beautiful. Probably it is a consequence of our meetings. If you want to blame somebody for that, it's me. I was critical of my boys because they are not, in my opinion, critical enough of each other." After I heard that, I thought, that is peak Mourinho, who's just like watching his players fight and he's just sitting there like clapping and applauding and cheering it on. It's like boy fights in Arrested Development when George Bluth is like cheering on and videotaping as his sons kill each other. But then I kind of thought more about it, and I was like, you know what? If we are going to give this manager a chance, he does need to be able to instill his kind of culture. And if he believes that there needs to be more on-field accountability, because what have we all said about Tottenham over the past, I don't know, few months, several months? They've looked lifeless. There's this feeling on the field that it's almost like guys don't care, that they're going through the motions. And Mourinho is not – he's just not going to accept that, for better or worse. And maybe this is a situation where you would say it's for worse. But you know what? Like, I think I'm generally okay with it. And part of that is also not just me wanting to see more fire from this club that we haven't seen, But, you know, it's also the way that Son and Lloris themselves handled it. Because these guys have been there. They've been through the wars with this club together. They know each other, I'm sure, extremely well. What did they do? You caught the glimpse of them coming out of the tunnel at halftime. They gave each other a hug. Son smiles. They're good. After the game, what happens? The camera catches Hugo Lloris, goes right up to Son and picks him up and gives him like a bear hug. Like, I think they're good. I think there was an incident. Maybe it shouldn't have been public, but whatever. Their manager is seemingly encouraging this stuff. Lloris is the captain. He wants to set that tone. Even if he overreacted, he's trying to show some fire. So, I don't know. Call me a Spurs homer. Call me a Jose Mourinho fanboy in this specific incident. But after kind of like gathering more context on it, I'm fine with it.
Look, I don't think there's a whole lot in it. I was just a little bit surprised it happened on the field, to be honest. And it was in a game that was dreadful. Even Mourinho said it was not pretty to watch, nor was it a great performance by Spurs. But after the defeat to Sheffield United, where so many things went wrong, it was good to get 3 points. Nothing else to say. If it happens again, then it'll become noteworthy. Otherwise, I would agree with what Craig Burley says. This thing happens all the time, regularly in training sessions, regularly behind the scenes. The only thing was that we got to see it this time. That's it. End of.
Let's see, JJ, Manchester United, they blast 5 past reeling Bournemouth, who are really in a bad way. I think one of the emerging storylines of this restart, in addition to Christian Pulisic, it's got to be Mason Greenwood and what he's done for them. And I just wonder, are you buying right now what you're seeing from him as a long-term solution, as a marquee striker for this club?
Yeah, very much so. I absolutely am. His ability to get good shots on goal, Andrew, his movement, the way he links in with this team, he's an absolute find for United. And look, definitely you want to see more of, their last stretch of games have been, how should we put it, comfortable for United to kind of get into a rhythm. But that aside, I mean, there was many times prior to this where they weren't in a rhythm, where they were playing teams they should be beating and they look really poor. He looks great and he's part of an emerging front three. And United are really, really lucky. It's interesting what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer had to say about, you know, in the context of, I mean, he didn't name check Haaland himself, but like in Mark Ogden's piece, Mark writes, Borussia Dortmund eventually won the race for Haaland, but the emergence of the 18-year-old Greenwood as one of Europe's hottest young strikers means United may not be so dismayed. And this is what Solskjaer said. We didn't find the right one outside of our club when asked about missing. Oh, when he was asked about missing out on Haaland, he did say specifically, but we now have Mason. And that kind of says a lot about the confidence that there is in the club about what this player can achieve. And look, watching him, I'm very impressed. I spoke to a Liverpool fan over the weekend and he said, not with worry, but with disappointment, because United have looked really good over the last few games. And I was like, yeah, those players look good. And there's a look, we've said it before, Andrew, never mind the signing of Bruno Fernandes, the players that have come up through the ranks in the club right now, Rashford and Greenwood. And well, obviously they signed Martial, but you know, he hasn't always been a hit. It looks good.
Yeah, it does. That Mark Ogden piece you referenced was really good. What was eye-opening to me was how he talked about, this was a guy who has been identified, like Sir Alex Ferguson a couple years ago, I think it was talking about this guy as being someone to keep an eye on. I took this out of the piece specifically. Mark Ogden said, sources have told ESPN that Solskjaer was so convinced by Greenwood, who was 17 when Solskjaer arrived as manager, that he felt he could offload Romelu Lukaku and Alexis Sanchez and hand the young striker the chance to stake his claim for a place in the first team. I mean, what an impression he must have made if at 17 years old, Solskjaer said, Lukaku, gone, Sanchez, gone. We've got a 17-year-old who's never done anything at this level, but I believe so much in that guy that I think we can get rid of some of these high-priced strikers. I mean,
well,
wow.
Yeah, but if you remember how Alexis Sanchez was playing for Manchester United, that was not a hard decision to make. And moving on to anyone was better than that. Lukaku, obviously, maybe a little bit harder, but not Sanchez.
Yeah, but it's going well for the kid, that's for sure. A couple quick ones here. Arsenal and Leicester City, 1-1 today. It goes, Arsenal's goal was, when they're right in attack, it looks good. You know, we haven't seen a ton of Ceballos this season because of his injury, but he played in a great ball.
What a ball.
Yeah, great ball to Saka, who now also looks like a great player. He plays it in. to Aubameyang. I mean, suddenly, you know, we've always said Arsenal and attack are going to be a dangerous team, and they are showing it right now.
Absolutely. And what a disappointing result in the end. If you watch that first half, Andrew, okay, Leicester had a goal ruled out that I thought was possibly legit. But outside of that, that first half in particular, and maybe 20 minutes of the second half, Arsenal should have been ahead. They should have been home and hosed. They looked like, dare I say it, Arsenal of old. That ball from Tobias to Saka, how good has Saka been? Absolutely brilliant.
He signed his contract, which we talked about.
Yeah, and they are desperate to get Tobias to work out an extension to stay at the club. And Arteta is working on that. One bit of news, though. You'll have noticed Matteo Guendouzi not in the squad again. Apparently, Guendouzi has not trained with the first team squad since the Brighton away match, the defeat at Brighton. And doesn't matter if he's considered a young talent, Arteta is done with him and is looking to move him on. That I didn't see. I thought Guendouzi would be a part of Arteta's plans, at least in the short term. And that's not the case now. They're desperate to offload, according to the papers.
Yeah, and a good win for them over the weekend against Wolves, a top four team. Huge loss for Wolves. But
Making Wolves game tomorrow even more important.
Yep. And then one more here. I don't have really anything to say about it. Manchester City, I'll just shrug my shoulders. They lose to Southampton on a crazy goal, chipping the keeper from how many yards out would you say that was? Like 35, 40, something like that. But like you look at Man City, 74% possession, 26 shots, and just nothing to show for it. Like,
Do you know what was really interesting? The person to deliver the bollocking to Zinchenko after he gave the ball away in the lead up to that goal, after he wasn't sharp enough turning and playing the pass, was not Pep Guardiola, but rather Raheem Sterling. Sterling tore into Zinchenko afterwards. Like, talk about asking for responsibility on the pitch. I mean, Mourinho would think that was beautiful too.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
What a great finish, by the way.
What's that?
That was such a great finish. That was my favorite goal of the weekend. The way he's just caught the ball is perfect and put that little bit of curl on it. Lovely goal.
Yeah. We've had some, like, considering people have said that the games haven't been great out of the restart, I would say we've had some really good individual goals since play has resumed.
What's been your favorite?
That one that you just said is definitely up there. What were some of the others? Now I'm drawing a blank. I mean, Zaha's from today would be up there. You might say that was more on the keeper, but watching it in real time, it was one of those like scream out loud moments.
Yeah. Mine is Neto's volley versus West Ham.
Oh, okay. That was also a great one. I also thought Ben Chilwell's.
That was nice.
Yeah. His was really
nice. Any of Liverpool's four against Southampton were just beauties.
Yeah. Let's take another quick break. When we come back, it is the return, JJ, of Red Card and Man of the Match. I'm very excited about this.
Looking forward to it.
Don't go anywhere. Oh, back now. Caught offside. JJ, let's go right into it. Red Card. Tweet, tweet. Can I go first here?
You may.
So we were just talking about Chelsea. Meant to bring this up on our last podcast, and I didn't, so I'll bring it up now. JJ, those new kits. Those new kits. I don't like them. And it's a shame because today was our first look at their away kit. And I actually really like the color of the away kit for Chelsea. But I can't put my finger on what it is. But for some reason, that number 3 on the front, just like, I don't know, it just seems weird to me. I guess it only works for Marcus Alonso. But like, it seems odd. And I don't mean to like take a shot at the company. It's 3UK, a telecommunications company.
Yeah, and they sponsor the Irish national team, which is the only national team that sells their jersey with a shirt sponsor.
I bet you love that. I know you
do. Well, you want to hear something? I've got this lovely, the Umbro Euro 2016 Ireland jersey is just beautiful. And I bought it, and this big plastic 3 in the middle of the chest. So I'm taking it to a tailor to have it removed. I can't look at it anymore. It's and once I saw it on Chelsea jersey, that was it. blah.
Yeah, I didn't like it either. Chris Wright wrote a little bit about the kit for ESPNFC. He said the new kit is inspired by London's proud history of fine tailoring with a subtle herringbone design, helping to emphasize the Blues' bold new sponsor logo. West Ham were on it. They tweeted from their team account, 3 huge points, get in there. With seemed like there was an emphasis on the three. I have a feeling they won't be the last team to do that. So, yeah. I'll give them this, though. I was reading a little more about it at Football London, and they said there that the kit is made from 100% recycled materials, including,
love that,
including recycled plastic bottles. So,
look, I don't mind the kit. It's the kit sponsor just kind of throws it out of whack.
Yeah. By the way, when I was looking this up, a couple other kits that have leaked that I'm going to just tell people to Google because I actually think they're pretty nice. Ajax away. Check it out. It's different and kind of cool. And also Manchester United's home jersey. There's like this subtle kind of like, I don't even know how to describe it. When you look at it, you'll see. I kind of like their jersey too.
So. You're talking about the gray Ajax away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's gorgeous. Isn't that cool? It's the kit of the season. It's wonderful.
Yeah. So there you go. What do you got?
My Ricard, Lazio's Patrick was sent off for biting late on in a loss at Lecce that dealt a massive blow to their title hopes. Defender Patrick was shown a straight red card for biting Lecce's Giulio Donati on the arm in injury time. Felipe Caicedo had scored a 5th-minute opener for the visitors, but Kumara Bakar headed in Filippo Falco's cross to level it up on 30 minutes, and struggling Lecce completed the turnaround after halftime as defender Fabio Lucione headed in from a corner. Now, that should have been that in terms of Lazio's Serie A ambitions, but in a bit of a cracker today, Milan, AC Milan, that is, beat Juventus 4-2 at the San Siro. So the standings right now mean it's still the 7 points. They're equal on games. Matches played, they have 31 games played. It's 75 points to 68. Lazio came out of the break. They were kind of hoping that they would be the team that could maybe run Juventus close, but it hasn't really worked out that way. They've lost at, let me see who they've lost at. They've lost at Atalanta and Milan, so it's kind of dented their hopes. But maybe there's a lifeline, even though they lost today. Maybe there is a lifeline, and we may yet have a title race, Andrew, although, yeah. Nah, probably not.
I don't believe when I see it. I don't know. That doesn't.
Yeah, I'm trying to get excited, but I can't.
Keep trying. Let's see now. Man of the match. let's see. So I went with this, JJ. There were a lot of nerves. We talked about this before when play resumed in the Premier League. Like, were they really ready? Kind of like what we're grappling with here with MLS. Well, the latest round of testing for coronavirus in England, with the Premier League specifically, came back yesterday. Yeah. 1,973 tests were conducted. Zero positives. Now, yeah. I don't know if that's luck. I don't know if it's players and teams doing the right thing. I don't know if it's England as a whole doing the right things. But the bottom line is this. The most important thing when it was announced that the league was coming back was everyone's health. And so with these latest results, we can at least feel good about the protocols that have been put into place and the decision that was made to even resume playing. I mean, remember what we were talking about, guys like Raheem Sterling, Danny Rose, like guys were openly concerned about their health and about kind of being thrust into this and not sure if they were ready. So this has to be viewed as encouraging, extremely encouraging. What I would say though to this is don't get cocky. Like don't let this positive result change your behavior. Unfortunately, I feel like that sometimes is human nature. People get a little careless. They think everything's fine. Well, I mean, we're not necessarily out of the woods yet. So just kind of keep doing what you're doing. And, you know, hopefully the focus remains on soccer rather than the risks of the soccer players being out there. So yeah, I saw that. I was like, wow, that is a good story. That is very positive.
It's a great story, and I'd love to think that it's just the rigor of the Premier League testing and the social distancing that they've done around the Project Restart that's really helped those figures to be unbelievably good. Because I don't know, maybe it's stuff we can apply in society. Of course it's stuff we can apply in society that can continue to you know, fight this disease.
Yeah. What do you have?
You remember Janinho?
Yeah.
That played for Olympic Lyonnais?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, he was
unbelievable in the video game.
Yeah, his free kicks.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he might be the best free kick taker I've ever seen. Like, he was unbelievably accurate. He's up there with your...
What a statement to throw out there at the end of the podcast. I'm trying to think now. Like, Pirlo...
Pirlo's up there. Beckham is certainly up at the top. Ian Hart is up there. I think... Who else would be up there? Ooh. I'd have to think more about that. But when I think about Janinho, I think about those free kicks. Anyway, he's been talking to Thiago Rebelo in The Guardian, Andrew, and he's been talking about a lot of the issues that are going on in football right now in terms of players speaking out about societal issues. And there's just some interesting thoughts he has about the Black Lives Matter movement and how racism has been such an issue in Brazil. And he gets very emotional in this piece. I will tweet out the link to the Guardian piece, but our conversation turns to the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis on the 25th of May and the Black Lives Matter movement. More than half of the Brazilian population identifies as black, and the country has had several cases similar to that of Floyd, including Yao Pedro, a 14-year-old boy killed by Brazilian police in June, or Agatha Felix, who was only 8 years old when he was shot in the back by police in the Rio favela in September 2019. She later died. This is Janinho speaking now. This is a clear racism, a confirmation of the kind of violent politics we have had in the country at the moment. How was it possible for an 8-year-old child to be shot by police like happened last year in the Complexo de Alamo? How is it possible to live after that? Unbelievable. Look at George Floyd. He couldn't breathe. He is a human being. I can't imagine how the police can do that. It's racism and very, very sad. Now, Janinho is the director of sport at Olympic Lyonnais right now. And I just read his words and he actually has to stop during the interview. Thiago Rebelo says how Janinho gets really emotional and cries. But the point about it is, has there ever been a time where players, current players, past players, people involved in football have ever spoken out so much on social issues? I don't think I've ever heard it before.
No.
Football always seemed this kind of enclosed environment. It's amazing. And I think when it's the biggest cultural movement in the world, it's the thing people talk about the most. And surely something good can come from people of influence in football talking about these issues.
I hope so. I certainly hope so.
Or at least awareness.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, let's take one more break. We'll come back after that and wrap things up. Don't go anywhere. Back now as we wind it down on Caught Offside. JJ, 1 year ago today. Any guesses?
No. What happened?
A couple things, actually. The U.S. women defeated the Netherlands 2-0
to
win the World Cup.
That was a year ago today. Wow. Time flies.
Which means that was also the same day of the Gold Cup final. Remember, like, the morning you had the U.S. women World Cup final, and then you and I hung out all day and then watched the Gold Cup final. Like, that was like an 18-hour day of, like...
Oh, that was a good day.
Well, yeah, the ending wasn't great, but the women winning the World Cup that day was awesome.
And didn't we catch the Copa America final as well?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was also in between. God, what a day. Yeah, that was something. Yeah, like hearing that it's the 1 year anniversary, I was thinking back about that, like the legacy of that women's team. I know a lot of people will talk about their brashness and all that. I think for me, in the end, the thing that, like, here we are a year later, what I think about most, I think it's kind of what I talked about that same day. Rose Lavelle. Like, I really feel like we have this new superstar, like truly world-class superstar that's going to be this unbelievable player for years to come. And I felt like it was kind of like it all culminated that day. She scored one of the two goals. You know, and here we are a year later. I feel like she's, you know, I love watching her play.
And when I watch her in the Challenge Cup as well, underrated, never talked about. She's super quick.
Yeah.
She ghosts past players. We're on about Pulisic running at players. Rose Lavelle does the exact same thing.
Yep. And then one other thing I wanted to mention, this was kind of my like man of the match honorable mention, but I'll just say it now. Bayern Munich, 4-2 over Bayer Leverkusen to win the German Cup. This team is a force right now. Like this is crazy, this unbeaten streak that they're on. Soon enough, domestic play is going to die down and we'll have the Champions League just thrown back at us. And I wonder, you know, we've said for a lot of the season that we really are having a hard time identifying the true Champions League favorites. Barcelona have, you know, haven't looked on it at times. Like, I wonder, maybe it's Bayern. Like, maybe that team right now, the way they're playing, Lewandowski's been unbelievable. You know, Alphonso Davies, we've talked about. Like, I think it's them right now.
Bayern are in such a roll. It's hard to believe, Andrew, that on the 2nd of November, 2019, earlier in the season, they got battered 5-1 by Eintracht Frankfurt.
Yeah.
Like, destroyed. That must have been the low point. And then Hansi Flick has come in, and just the way they play, Andrew, it's the hardest thing. Jurgen Klopp was talking this morning. The hardest thing, he said, for a manager to do is to come in and change the style of play, implement your style of play, and still be competitive in matches with the players you've got. Just deal with what you've had and change the direction of a team whilst also being competitive in games. Hansi Flick has done that. It's been amazing. It really has.
Yeah. So there you go, man. What a show. Oh, my God. I feel like we really covered a lot today. Our thanks to Stefano Fusaro. We'll continue to be in touch with him throughout this tournament. And it gets underway tomorrow. Should be a lot of fun, man. Hey, this was fun.
If you feel you need a COVID-19 test, don't let Andrew's bumbling put you off. Go get one.
No, if anything, I feel like I've provided a warning to everyone. No pictures. Keep the windows down until somebody specifically tells you to roll them, or keep them up until somebody tells you to roll them down. Let me be the country's punching bag. I'll be the guy who takes all of this, just so you all know what to do. That's right.
And always wear pants.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, that is a given. That is a given. Hey, this was fun, man. To you, I say.
Check you later. Fun boy.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.